This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here as we wrap up another week of Inside Douglas County programs. Today, focusing on the U.S. economy, noted national economist Dr. Elliot Eisenberg with us from Miami. Elliot, thanks for being on this afternoon.
My pleasure, Kyle. Always great to talk to you.
So, first of all, 3 months into possibly the craziest time in recent U.S. history, give us your overall thoughts about the state of the U.S. economy.
Hey, it's okay. I think that's the best way to put it. It's not spectacular, but it's okay. We've taken this huge gut punch, sucker punch to the stomach. We've survived it. We're getting out of it. Now it's hopefully nothing derails us. That's the most important thing. Consumer sentiment is improving. All the data has bottomed out. And almost across the board, you're seeing improvement in just about every single measure of consumer and business sentiment. It doesn't mean we're thrilled. It doesn't mean corporations are going to stop buying plant and equipment. No, but the worst is by far over. We just need to stay on focus now. No dumb mistakes, no policy errors, and so on.
Now, talk about yesterday's big downturn on the stock market after more data was released regarding new applications for employment and some other things like that.
And I'm not sure what exactly it was that pushed the market down, but it had gone wildly up. I mean, the NASDAQ broke a new record all-time high across 10,000. So the stock market recovery was somewhat surprising. I mean, interest rates are low and bonds pay nothing, and there's the problem of there is no alternative, or TINA, which is driving people into the market. But I think the market just got a bit of ahead of itself and got a little overexcited and didn't really think that there could be a downer. And then Fed Chairman Powell Wednesday afternoon really puts a wet blanket on everybody and says, you know, it's going to be a long time. Unemployment's going to stay high. A coronavirus could return. He was essentially, you know, bringing us back to reality. And if reality brings the market down by a couple thousand points, 7% or so, that's not so bad. That's sort of a reassurance in a way. That might be the worst it gets. I don't know. I'm not a prognosticator. But, hey, not bad.
What happens when people sell due to fear? I mean, was yesterday a logical action, or were people just jumping on a train that was headed down the tracks?
Well, yeah, once the market starts to build this downward momentum or upward momentum, everybody either jumps in or jumps out collectively. So no one cares why. You're just trading on momentum. But the overall, the reason why the market does what it does, yeah, who knows? I've given up trying to understand that. I keep thinking the market's got to be at least as smart as I am, and sometimes it always makes a fool out of me, so I have no idea. If I told you, I would just make up the answer. I don't know. No one knows.
It was interesting to watch that yesterday, especially after everything had gone back up recently. In fact, I was almost to the point at looking at my own investments that I have literally not looked at since March. And then yesterday happened, and I'm like, well, okay, maybe I'm not going to look yet.
You aren't the only one. That's the advice I tell everybody. Don't look at your statements until you're ready. Continue with your investment portfolio. Keep doing what you're doing. If it made sense 3 months ago or 4 months ago, it probably still makes sense now, unless you're aging very rapidly or something, you know, like the speed of light or something. Just stick with it. Things will turn around. This problem will go away. There'll be a vaccine. It may take 6 months or 16 months or 26, but it'll happen. Don't worry.
So what's it like being an economist during this time of COVID-19, these rapid number changes, things going up, things going down, and a lot of general instability in America, and the market never likes instability?
Yeah, I'm doing more drinking. That's what's happening right now. I mean, I'm tired. I love what I do. I love economics, but I feel like economics is punching me in the stomach every week. The amount of time I have to spend just understanding what's going on and why something might be happening. Labor markets are just very complex right now. Millions of people losing their jobs, millions of people starting new jobs, tons of money going to people in terms of the $1,200 checks and the $500 checks, a boost in the unemployment insurance. What is it that's driving these processes? If you don't understand why something's happening, there isn't even a way to explain what's going on, let alone prognosticate or forecast. So you spend all your time just trying to gather information and understand things. This is a little unusual. It's exciting. It's unusual. It's stressful.
With everything that's been going on and the rapid movements made by the federal government, do you feel like some of the legislation, some of the way stimulus packages and different things regarding unemployment were put together were not well thought out enough?
I give them a high grade. I really do. They were under intense pressure. Things were falling apart. The stock market was crashing back in middle of March. It hit the bottom on March 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. They had to do something very fast. And given the constraints they were living under and the time constraints and all this and that, I give them a B+. Of course I would do it differently, but I just, you know, that's the luxury of time and hindsight and all of these sorts of things. But 535 people in the president agreeing on something in short order, they did a good job. Now they're going to have to revisit things now, and they could do a little better going forward. But I give them high grade. They have to go come forward with more money, though. That's critically important. They don't have the luxury of just saying, well, things are better. The trend is good. Lots of jobs last month. You don't have to help. No. Unemployment's incredibly high.
Yeah, in fact, let's talk about unemployment. Now, we've seen different numbers out. We had some of the numbers yesterday about the folks filing. At the same time, some people are headed back to work. Others have been found out they, you know, are not going to be able to go back to what they did before. Talk about some of the employment data you've seen recently.
So there's two sets of data that we can look at. The first set's weekly data, and it looked at unemployment, first-time unemployment claims, so someone becoming unemployed. Those numbers peaked out around 7 million about 2 months ago, maybe 2.5 months ago, you know, late March, early April. And they were in the almost 7 million for several weeks. They've been steadily declining. They're now 1.5 million. That's good. That's really good compared to what it was. But it used to be just 200,000 before coronavirus. So it's still 6 or 7 or 8 times higher than it was. So we got a ways to go on that one. The other weekly piece of data that comes out is continuing claims. This is people who are still unemployed after 1 week or 2 weeks or whatever the duration is, and they're getting unemployment insurance at that point. That number, fortunately, is plateauing. It was growing and growing and growing for the first 8 or 9 weeks, but now it's flattened out. Now, the question is, why is it flattening out? Is it flattening out because we're finding lots of new jobs, or people are dropping out of the labor force? We don't have the answers to these questions, so we're kind of at a loss as to being sure what's going on. But I imagine it's some of both. Either way, we need that number to stop going up, the continuing claims number, and it is. And on the unemployment front, it came down last month. It was a mismeasurement error by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It kind of blew it. But the unemployment rate legitimately fell 2 or 3 percentage points last month, despite the errors, once you fix the errors. So we're going in the right direction, but we need more stimulus. We can't afford a policy mistake. We can't have trade disputes with China right now. We have to focus everything on the economy.
What about the stimulus?
The data is getting better.
What about the stimulus, though, in terms of the long-term impact on the federal budget deficit?
Okay, wow. Okay, next question, that's a tough one. Okay, kidding aside. So, yeah, sure, it's going to get much worse. The deficit this year is going to be, I don't know, 15, 16, 17, 18% of GDP. We're talking, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars, $4 trillion. These are some calendar quirks could change it, but this is an unbelievably large number. It's the biggest since World War II. It's the right thing to do. Now, there's in the long run, this is going to hurt us flexibility-wise. I mean, you have a large deficit, it can cause problems, right? But in the short run, we have no choice. If your house is burning down, you don't worry about the water bill. You put out the fire, you fix the house, and you'll deal with the water bill when it comes. Same thing here. And fortunately for us, in the short run, interest rates remain staggeringly low. When 10-year treasuries are paying 0.7%, we can afford to borrow a lot of money and not really incur much cost. That doesn't mean we can keep doing this forever, and Congress does have to get things under control once this problem is firmly in the rearview mirror. We're aging, healthcare costs are going up, Social Security payments are going to start to rise. There are a lot of demands on the U.S. budget. We have to get our house in order. But rates are low. We have a few extra years. We can afford this. It's the right thing to do.
If you look at some of the overall data right now, is how the data is interpreted or looked at partially determined by where someone lives? For instance, Douglas County here, one of the lowest COVID-19 attack rate counties in Oregon. Oregon is one of the lowest attack rate parts of the U.S. So we have our perspective here based on what we see versus people analyzing data in states that are still very much more locked down.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the national lockdown that we had in the month of April, last week of March and all of April pretty much, was, I think, probably misguided in retrospect. We all thought there'd be many, many more cases than there were, and it didn't turn out to be that many. I think in the future going forward, what it should be done is governors should, you know, not be pressured into doing anything, and they should decide what they need based on cases and spare beds and ventilators in each particular state, because having Oregon closed down because New York or even Washington State has got a problem is really bad, is a bad idea. Let each state do the way they want to do it, and And the ones who are more cautious, they close longer. And these are political choices. But we don't need national lockdowns unless we have hundreds of hotspots come the fall or something when it may reoccur. Hopefully not.
And obviously, compared to certain parts of the world where folks are in countries that just based on the government structure overall tend to lock down and have more restrictions on life, period, it seems like some folks in those places are actually coping better versus the U.S. where people kind of chafe at any kind of restrictions like that.
Yeah, if you look at the data, you look at Southeast Asia or Pacific Asia, if you will, right? You know, Vietnam and South Korea and Japan and so on, maybe China, but they lie about their data, so you have no idea what they're saying is true. They seem to objectively and collectively all do better than the Western European English and English-speaking countries. Now, Australia does well, New Zealand, that's a little different there. But generally speaking, Europe and North America haven't done so hot. We don't want to give up our freedom. We don't want to give up our coffee in the morning, walking around outside. We don't take orders from government that well, even in Europe. I mean, America's numbers are high, but on a per capita basis, they're a little higher than the average European country, but not much worse, because we're 50 different countries here, essentially, right? And there's no unified systems. But even they have problems too. It's a viewpoint about life and freedom and democracy and not being told what to do. And America's a bit more than Europe, but they're no shining stars either. It's Southeast Asia really is the best.
Going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Dr. Elliot Eisenberg with us. The interview will podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQBN. Monday's program, Dr. Greg Brigham of ADAPT will talk about the sobering center that is being planned for the Roseburg area. We'll talk more about that, talk about some of the groups that are involved in trying to make this happen and some of the timelines and aspects of having a sobering center in Roseburg. Dr. Elliot Eisenberg with us, nationally known economist, coming to us from Miami. I've got to ask you, I imagine, is it pretty warm down in Miami today?
Today it is. It's about 86, and with the humidity, it feels like 93, but the breeze is good, and the palm trees are beautiful. I recommend you come and vacation here.
Well, hopefully we'll be getting out and doing some vacationing at some point this year. You know, looking at the rest of the year, for the U.S. economy, what are some of the things we should expect in the coming months?
And so assuming we stay on track and we don't, you know, there are four things that make me nervous, three or four things that make me nervous about coronavirus, about the problems we have. One is the return of coronavirus in the fall. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's hope Congress and the administration come with a rescue package for us, because we need it to get us to good growth and lower unemployment. We don't need a trade war. That would be really ill-advised, right? So there are a couple of things we just don't need right now. But assuming none of that happens, we get away from that, growth should start to occur. The recession may already actually be over. It began in March. It may have ended in May already. It will certainly end in June. This will be the shortest recession in U.S. history, just 3 or 4 months. And the second half of 2020 is growth. We should have very good growth in Q3 and Q4. And then in 2021, growth will continue to slow and get back to trend. But for a year, about 4 quarters, we should have well above trend growth. Unemployment should decline relatively rapidly. By the end of the year, unemployment will go from where it is now, say 16 to maybe 11. And by next year, maybe down to 7 or 8, if all goes well. And, you know, 3 years from now, we're back on to square one. It's a long haul, 2.5 to 3 years, but that's what we're looking at. But there should be solid growth. It really should be.
You know, a lot of people, of course, at the front end of all of this, since nobody'd really ever gone through anything quite like this, we're hopeful that the growth, though, would come back quicker.
We would. There's actually one woman who actually got influenza who also now contracted coronavirus. So there's one case of someone who lived long enough to experience both. It would be nice to have it go faster. And the economic definition of a recession ending is not what you and I think of as a recession ending. It's all it means is things aren't getting worse. Once things stop getting worse, the recession's over. So we can have 20% unemployment, but we're now in a recovery phase, and people still think it's terrible. So, yeah, we'd like to see more robust recovery. That would mean more stimulus, fiscal stimulus from Washington, D.C. And there's only so much our economy can withstand at this point because we're still partially closed and we're only reopening now. We don't need a lot of stimulus yet, although we may need that come summer if things don't start taking off. We might in 3 months need a little more. We'll see.
What about sectors that might be especially more impacted for a longer period of time?
Yeah, those are the obvious ones, right, where people get together, be it a bar or sporting events or concerts or tractor pulls or certain vacation-type spots, Las Vegas. These places are going to have trouble for the longest period of time. Other stores like Best Buy are going to figure it out. You know, we'll have appointments, we'll come in. Offices will figure it out, we'll work from home. But some sectors are really, sports in general, they're going to have a hard time figuring out how to make it work. And they will. They'll figure out something. They'll play games like in Orlando. All the NBA games are being played in Orlando in a bubble, essentially. It's not great, but it works. And we'll get a vaccine one of these days, too. That's important to keep in mind. So many companies are pushing very hard for a vaccine. They'll get one in a year and a half, maybe less. It'll happen.
What about interest rates and home sales? Where do you see those going for in the next few months?
Well, one's helping the other. Rates are stupendously low. 30-year mortgages are now around 3%, 3.8% or 2.875%, whatever they are. That's helping housing. Housing prices have not come down. You'd almost not know there was a problem if you looked at the housing market based on sale prices. Sales activity is down because listings are down because households don't want to put their house on the market or search for another house. There's some problems there because of coronavirus. But basically, the housing market's strong. Existing sales will bounce back. We'll start going back up again in June. And new home sales probably troughed out in April, maybe in May, the latest. So the housing sector is doing well. Res construction's fine, and res resales are okay. They really are. They're a great, one of the strongest. Autos have also totally made a big comeback. Sales declined by over 50% in April, but in May they started bouncing back. And by July or August, I'd expect them to be back to where they were a year ago.
How's the U.S. economy faring compared to other parts of the world?
If you ranked all the countries out there, major U.S., major economies, you know, big enough economies that matter, we deemed the size of the contraction from coronavirus would put the U.S. at the bottom of the top 30, we'd be about 35 percentile. So the top, sorry, 60, 33, yeah, we'd be the bottom of the top third. The bottom of the top third is where our economic performance will end up. So it's pretty good. It gets us a solid B minus.
Interesting. What about areas of the world particularly hit hard?
Oh, there are some places like Brazil that are really being hit hard now. There are Iran being particularly hard hit, South Africa. There are a number of places that are. Generally, these are poorer countries with weaker healthcare systems. And, you know, we could afford to sit in our homes for a month or a month and a half. And while it was very expensive, we have the borrowing ability and some wealth to do it. But poorer countries, it's like a death sentence. People don't have enough money to live off of, and the governments don't have the money to spend. So they open up, they close their economy, they open it back up because they have no choice. Russia also has very high levels of coronavirus. And they're doing it because they have an election coming up, or they want to have an election. Putin wants to look good, so they're opening up the doors, social doors, and I think it will end badly. But there are some that are bad, and your heart goes out to them.
And some of the poor countries, I was following the other day an article about parts of Central America where you have poverty on a good day, and it looked like they were really having some big issues with just getting food to people, for example.
Right. I mean, you look at a place like, you know, Rio or something, you have these favelas or whatever, right? And millions of people live in them, and they're not really focusing on coronavirus. They're focusing on eating enough calories for the day and so on. So there's a lot. These countries are ill-equipped to deal with it. And on top of that, in Brazil, for example, the president, Bolsonaro, has, we could say, delicately fumbled the ball on this coronavirus without being more explicit on it. So they have mixed messages, poverty, weak healthcare systems. It's a bad recipe.
Before we go, you have an opportunity for folks to hear from you every day through email. How do they get connected?
Absolutely. My website's econ70.com, E-C-O-N, the number 7, the number 0.com. Or you can follow me every day by texting the word bowtie to the 5-digit number 22828. and you'll start hearing from me regularly. Thank you, Kyle.
All right, Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, we appreciate your being on this afternoon.
Thanks very much. I look forward to next time already.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.